Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He's a relatively young former prosecutor who ran for office before he became a Chicago alderman. Now he speaks out frequently about fiscal responsibility. This past week, he was the featured guest at the Lincoln Forum, and this week, we'll hear much of what Alderman Bill Conway had to say. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. William Conway is alderman of the 34th Ward, which includes a decent chunk of downtown. He's been a lot of things, actually. He was a naval intelligence officer, and he served overseas. He was an assistant state's attorney in Cook County. And now, as alderman, he serves as the vice chair of the powerful City Council Finance Committee. Last Wednesday, Alderman Conway was the featured guest for the Lincoln Forum luncheon at the Union League Club downtown. I had the honor of being the moderator for that event. It was a wide-ranging discussion, and we'll let you hear how it went. News was breaking as we sat down. It was reported that the Chicago School Board was going to refuse Mayor Johnson's request to pay for this year's pension debt for non-teaching school employees. It's something they were doing for the past couple of years, and as the board moves towards independence, that was changing. The city is obligated to make the payment and already has, but the issue is whether the schools will reimburse the $175 million, and the report is they won't. Bill Conway is among alderpersons who say the city council should have a voice in deciding where the money to fill the budget gap should come from.
We have the broader issue that we across city council, city government, and our sister agencies really need to be collaborating on this so that we're not finding out about something like this that's 5 days before the end of the year in terms of how are we going to deal with this.
But still, the question is, what can the city do? What should the city do? It's not like the city council hasn't known about this problem and known what the options are up to this point. Mm-hmm. What is the best path?
Well, when we talk about the Board of Ed, we're supposed to be in a situation where they want to make themselves an independent body. The CPS is supposed to be an independently elected body. And if they want to have that situation, they're the ones that should cover the payment. Now, if they are unwilling to cover the payment, there are various places we are going to have to look, and a lot of them are difficult places. But there are some bond authorizations and other things that we can look at to cover this. But it really should not come to this point for a sister agency 5 days before the end of the year.
And it is likely that the city is going to try to do this without they are going to, we believe, declare this an unpaid debt, basically, because they were expecting the money from the schools. And they're saying, or I think they will say, mm-hmm. that, if we have to make up unpaid debt, we can do that without a city council vote. Going forward, what does have to happen, and you've put in a measure about this, for any future moves like this?
Well, it would just be incredible for the mayor's office to really do that without coming to city council. Now, part of the reason we are where we are is because they haven't solved this problem 5 days before the end of the year. But going forward, it says something really about the level of oversight that we need to be having in city council. I mean, the mayor likes to call himself the collaborator in chief, but he's proven himself otherwise in a lot of high profile situations. 35 members of city council wanted to keep ShotSpotter, including, by the way, the superintendent in a University of Chicago crime lab, in addition also to my colleague, Alderman P. Chico, who's a police officer, and yet he chose not to do it. 41 members of city council told him, hey, you really can't fire Pedro Martinez. And he did it anyway until the courts stood in the way. He barely passed his budget. So I hope at some point the mayor and his team will begin to collaborate with us in city council, because we want to be helpful. But it is hard to be helpful when 5 days before the end of the year, the mayor's office is saying, hey, by the way, I'm just going to take $175 million of taxpayer funding. 2 days before the end of the year, he took $95 million of COVID money, too. So this has been a running theme that just seems to be getting worse and worse.
How much progress is there between the city council and the mayor's office in getting what would satisfy you about transparency or more transparency from the operations there?
Yeah, you know, that, as I've kind of indicated, it's unfortunately been going the wrong direction on a lot of things. And I think we really saw that on the most recent bond authorization. And I'll tell you how that all came together. On Monday, February 10th, at Finance Committee, there was an $830 million bond that was put out, and it passed the Finance Committee like 17-3. But I was one of the three no votes. You kind of can either assert no or do nothing. So, so I thought it was a bad idea. On Tuesday, randomly find in this email the debt service repayment schedule. And what it indicated was that we would take out the $830 million worth of bonds, not pay anything for 2 years, so the interest would capitalize. Then we'd pay interest only for the next 18 years. And then from 2045 to 2049, we would then start paying like $80 million a year. And then from 2050 to 2055, we'd be paying like $140 million a year. And so I immediately wrote to the finance department and said, hey, I want to confirm the accuracy of this. No response, as you might imagine. Then Thursday, I get a response that says, could you please clarify your question? I'm like, yes, I would like you to confirm for me that this debt service repayment schedule is accurate. No response at all, and then I went to the Tribune after that in hopes that it would in hopes that it would derail that. Unfortunately, that terrible bond authorization passed 26-23, but that is an indicator of how these things are going in terms of transparency. And while I am very upset that we lost that vote, the fact that we got 23 people to vote against it is, versus prior administrations, is a bit of a milestone.
So then when you're talking about fiscal responsibility in this administration, what will it look like given the kind of fights that you have to get into, even if you're trying to get simple information?
I, first of all, cannot indicate enough how difficult our fiscal situation is in the city of Chicago. It has the ability, if we don't really start working on it, to subsume every other problem we have. Or we can't spend money on infrastructure or public safety or economic growth or promoting the city or whatever it is. It has the ability to subsume every other problem. And we really need to be willing to make the tough choices. And I wish I could tell you that we will never raise property taxes ever again, but I can't tell you that. But I will say this. If we're ever going to ask the taxpayers for one more dollar, we need to show that we in City Council are making the city run as efficiently as we can. And unfortunately, I can promise you today that we are not doing that.
Let's talk about some of the things that tax money and other things would be spent on. Something near and dear to the hearts of people here, and specifically in your ward, LaSalle Street redevelopment. And in the atmosphere that we're operating now, where federal funds for the city are up in the air, the economy itself, is it still moving in the kind of direction that we should be encouraged by, especially when we're talking about bringing low, moderate income housing to the area in these buildings, as well as more business?
every city in the world needs to rethink its central business district. They can't just be a place where people work anymore. They have to be able to live and eat and shop there. And that is what really the South Street project is about. And so I will say that I have been happy how these things have begun to move forward, because if we lose out on LaSalle Street at a time when we're going to get a real catalyst with Google moving in. And what's great, I know we have a great project we're cutting the ribbon on tomorrow at 79 West Monroe that will create some new housing. And that housing will come online almost exactly at the same time as the Google Thompson Center. But that is the benefits of those projects, and revitalizing LaSalle Street will create construction jobs and activity that will radiate throughout the city. So I am happy that that is moving forward. And I hesitated on the name, because I'll tell you all a little side story here. So I kept, and I've always been really promoting LaSalle Street, and I kept calling it the LaSalle Street Reimagined Program, the LaSalle Street Reimagined Program. So the mayor's office comes to me and said, you know, can you please stop using that terminology? Because that was the terminology of the last administration, and we need to, can you stop calling it that? And I said, as long as you do the projects, I'll call it Brandon Johnson Remakes Downtown. We could call you whatever you want. I said, but you guys tell me what you want to call it. So they came back and they said, Alderman, going forward, could you call it the Loop Revitalization Project? So, Craig, I'll say that I'm very happy how we are working to revitalize downtown and LaSalle Street.
How realistic is it to look at this as actually bringing affordable housing to an area that has been unaffordable for so many people? Are people really going to be attracted to live in buildings that they might be able to work in?
Yeah, I do think so. One reason that we have a new ward in the middle of downtown that I'm blessed to represent is there are more people that are moving around Grant Park naturally. We see that kind of in Lakeshore East. I have a couple wonderful constituents here who live on Michigan Avenue as well, and so I think pulling that a little bit westward will bring folks, and I also think that it will continue to spur the arts and culture that we have downtown, as well as infrastructure as well. So I do think that it will provide that catalyst, and right at a time when Google Thompson Center is coming online as well.
And now let's look at the broader picture. How do you keep downtown vibrant and still make sure that there's development and revitalization in the other parts of the city that for a long time were ignored but have been getting some attention from this administration?
Well, first of all, I think parts of LaSalle Street will radiate with job growth really throughout the city. But when I think of how are we going to create economic growth all over the city, the two things that I really look at are jobs and housing. And when people want to do developments anywhere in the city, there is a lot they have to go through, too much they have to go through the Department of Housing, through even through DPD, through Department of Buildings, etc. So we need to really begin to get after all of that red tape that we see throughout city government. I mean, if you look at some of the costs of some of these units, you're like, oh, geez, it's crazy we're spending $800,000 a unit or whatever it is, but then you begin to look under the hood of why that is. A lot of it is soft costs that are kind of government regulation. So those are the type of things that we need to encourage folks to who want to invest in the city to be able to do so. And that's why one of the reasons, at least, we have a significant housing shortage here in the city of Chicago. But the same is also true on the job side. I remember when I first came in office, I had folks from Ferrero Candy who came to see me. And they said, Bill, we want to, they probably called me Alderman, but I'm fine with first name. And they said, Alderman, we want to create this innovation center in the Macy's building that's going to bring about 120 good-paying jobs. And I said, fantastic. What do you need from me? And they said, well, the Department of Buildings keeps rejecting our permits. And I said, what? What do you mean? And they said, well, we have these, we're an Italian company, and we have these innovation centers all over the world. And so we brought in a lot of European equipment to this innovation center. And there's a local ordinance that says all electronic equipment has to be UL certified. And this, then the equipment they brought, of course, was CE certified, which is the European equivalent. And so I said, that's crazy. So myself, my chief of staff, we called the building commissioner every day for a month, and they eventually got an exception to open. But it took a heck of a lot of an effort to cut what should have been a piece of common sense red tape. But even if you look at that more broadly, we used to hear all the time about how then Mayor Rahm Emanuel would be pounding the table to get forcing his way into rooms in order to get companies to move their headquarters here or move jobs here. And you just don't hear about a lot of that happening today.
Does that mean that the red tape project that this administration launched is not bearing fruit?
I just have not seen. I am all about cutting red tape, as I've kind of mentioned. I just can't think of any red tape that has actually been cut in this administration. It was kind of this nice announcement, and then you kind of didn't hear anything more about it.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and you're hearing portions of 34th Ward Alderman Bill Conway's appearance at the Lincoln Forum lunch at the Union League Club this week. The alderman is a strong proponent of the now-silenced ShotSpotter gunshot detection system that the mayor's office discontinued, saying it was not effective. The administration has promised to find new and better technology. I asked Bill Conway how confident he is that will happen.
Not very confident. I have not heard any. I hope I'm wrong on that, but I have not heard any update on that. And this was something that existed. I mean, this was in process before the beginning of the year, and we still have not gotten any feedback on that. And I don't think this should be sort of a difficult thing to solve here. If we can't figure out which piece of acoustic gunshot recognition technology we're going to use in a 4-month period, it's kind of what are we doing here? Now, and why this was such a unfortunate issue is that one thing I will give the mayor credit for is his selection of Superintendent Snelling. I think Superintendent Snelling is doing a great job. Yeah, let's hear it for the superintendent for sure. And when he was being confirmed, I asked him, I said, how do you operate in an environment where you're 1,500 to 2,000 police officers short of what you should have? And he says, I really look at technology as a force multiplier in that regard. And he mentioned, this was long before ShotSpotter was taken out, but he mentioned ShotSpotter as one of those tools that he would rely upon. And we look at what other cities are doing. New York has a 90% lower homicide rate than the city of Chicago. Los Angeles has a 80% lower homicide rate than the city of Chicago. And they're essentially doing two things that we're not doing. The first one is a full embrace of technology. Of course, they both have ShotSpotter, but they've really been using AI technology in terms of predicting crime and hotspots, et cetera, that we're not doing here. The second thing that they have done, especially in Los Angeles, is a full embrace of a community policing model where police are generally kept in the same districts or even beats. They begin to know the players, the areas, and are able to police effectively. And when Superintendent Brown was there, he really got rid of that. It was very much a like people chasing the soccer ball around, in terms of trying to figure out where crime is, which is proven not effective. Now Superintendent Snelling has begun to pull that back and try and keep officers where they are, but it's difficult to undo that.
What could be done differently or better about public safety in this area, in the downtown area, because we are seeing more crime creep into the area, mm-hmm. more incidents, and then sometimes they're isolated incidents, but nevertheless they're here.
Well, I do come back to keeping First District off. This is all in the First Police District. First District police officers here, so they have begun to recognize where the difficulty is, and then certainly the use of technology as well. There is not ShotSpotter downtown because the buildings make it ineffective, but beyond that, other uses of technology like predictive AI that other cities have done. I mean, there's not a whole lot of crime in Manhattan, for example, and it's because of those reasons, and that's what we need to be looking to here.
I actually got a good question I wish I had thought of before I got up here.
I'm already scared, considering we jump right into the toughest issue in the city.
And that is, can you give us an update, to the best of your knowledge, on what's happening with the inner city bus terminal?
Oh, yeah, I was expecting that question. I will say that first of all, in this city, we need to have a multimodal transportation system. That is something that other cities have, we don't have, and that's a significant issue. Beyond that, you know, looking at the Greyhound terminal itself, you have a couple things at play. On one hand, it is something that is not too far from Union Station, which is good in that regard. But you've also had a lot of crime there. I mean, you had a Greyhound employee who was shot and killed outside a couple years ago as well. So I am all in favor of us making sure that we can keep Greyhound safe and there, or put it in a better position if we can. At this moment in time, they have a month-to-month lease with the city. It is interesting. The mayor's office was working on this a bit, and I had to find out from one of our U.S. senator's office what was going on. This is kind of how this tends to go. And then we had myself and some senior officials in the mayor's office had a difficult conversation, and they have sort of kept me out of it since. So I am forced to get information by talking to the other stakeholders at play here. But to my knowledge, still a month-to-month lease going on at the current Greyhound terminal.
Are Greyhound's finances an issue in any of this? I mean, are we worried about a company that may have some problems backing up or holding up its end of the bargain?
Well, it's a little bit more of a complicated issue than that, because the Greyhound has actually been split up into two entities. So what Greyhound did is they took their real estate and they sold it to a private equity firm. And then they took their bus operations and they sold it to Flixbus. And Flixbus has a business model where they don't really operate with a terminal. So you can understand why we in the city don't want that either. So that is the issues that need to be worked on.
Okay. And warning, we are going to give you all a chance to ask some questions. So be ready for that, but first,
how about some softballs? Craig's guessed me some hard ones here, so when it comes around to you.
That's because I know you can handle
them. Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sometime I'll tell you a story about somebody else who
you know, I'll tell you, so I have had the pleasure of being on Craig's show At Issue on two occasions. So the first time was like really early on in my candidacy for Cook County State's Attorney. And I remember I was like real nervous going on, you know. Being on Craig's show, as you heard his bio, is kind of a bit of a bucket list item for politicians.
You need to get out more.
Well, that is no doubt true. I got three little kids, so there's no doubt I need to get out more. But so I remember I was, you ask a question and I'd give like these 3, 4, 5 word, one sentence answers. And I remember we're getting about 10 minutes in and Craig's like, Bill, you can give more fulsome answers to the second one. And then I remember the second time, it was like a bit of a filibuster, and you were like trying to stop me and all of that. So I'm trying to do like a happy medium here at this point.
You have achieved balance.
Oh, good. It took me a few years in this business. Yeah.
But let me There's no way a political editor can sit up here and ask you and talk to you without, especially in this season. We're 2 years into Brandon Johnson's term. Popularity ratings are out and everything like that. How much consideration have you given to the idea of perhaps at some point running for mayor?
Well, I'll take the applause as compliments, but I will say that we have, a lot of people want to talk about 2027, but the problems that we have here in 2025 in terms of what we're dealing with, like I said, like I've talked about public safety, what I've dealt with in terms of economic growth, but really our fiscal health. If we're not spending a lot of time working on those things in 2025, whoever's mayor in 2027, it's going to get a lot tougher. So I am focused on 2025 and getting after those problems here today, and you know, not thinking about that at this point.
But you're not going to rule out anything in the future, are you?
Craig, I'm not going to rule out anything here today or jump into anything, you know, in terms of that. But I appreciate the question and the positive response.
Yeah, there you go. That was like the most popular question. But okay, I think it is time for questions.
And I've got the microphone.
So, by the way, if I could say something real fast here, we got a good friend of mine, Commander Jeff Gray here. I know that the sir, as Lieutenant Commander Conway, who was of some rank, but not nearly as Commander Gray, I really appreciate hearing. And can we ask all the veterans in the room to stand up if there's some more of you here? There you go. There we go. A lot of good group here. So I know the Union League Club has always been very supportive of veterans, and I, as a veteran myself, I greatly appreciate it, and certainly happy to be here at such a pro-veteran institution.
Okay.
Thank you, Alderman. Lynn Rinkowski?
Alderman, no, I won't ask you the next time you're coming to our building, I promise. But
they
the
asked
city,
you think Craig's questions are hard. I went to their building. It was like a cross examination or something.
Okay. But the city of Chicago is being held prisoner by the Chicago Teachers Union. How do you see that working out? I mean, it's they're running the city.
Is there a question in there, Lynn? I you know, one thing I will say, it is the fiscal situation of this city and our sister agencies makes things very difficult for everybody, in the sense that for obvious reasons, nobody wants to cut spending, nobody wants to raise taxes, nobody wants to talk about pension stuff, nobody wants to close schools, and those are all admirable things. But inevitably, some of that tension in those places has to be balanced. I mean, of course, I have concerns like every other Chicagoan that the mayor, who is supposed to be has fiduciary responsibility to all of us in Chicago, is giving extra credence to the Chicago Teachers Union, especially the situation where the Chicago Fire Department hasn't had a contract in over 3+ years, and it feels like that doesn't really get a lot of a lot of press. But we will see what happens in that negotiation, and then go from there.
I would like to thank 34th Ward Alderman Bill Conway for a great conversation, and my thanks to the Union League Club and the Lincoln Forum for inviting me to ask the questions. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.